The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me today. Boy, a lot going on in the world of bioethics. And something you may not get reported on in the mainstream media, but I came across something I think you should be aware of. You know, I've been following what the Chinese have been doing for a long time on a lot of different fronts. And I saw an article talking about four ethics-breaking biological experiments, okay? Four ethics-breaking biological experiments that are touted by the Chinese as world firsts. And I want to go through some of those with you. They involve a rat model of male pregnancy. What? We'll talk about that. What's that even mean, right? We're talking about human monkey chimeric embryos. We're dealing with gene-edited babies. We've talked about that in the past as well. And then, of course, gain-of-function experiments on coronaviruses. And I think it's important to look at the big picture, to sit back, to zoom out, and to say, hey, are there ethical violations going on right now coming out of China? And what does it portend for your future? You know, human ingenuity, I really believe, is such a blessing. It's such a great gift from God. It's a God-given gift. Unfortunately, gosh, do we misuse that gift? I mean, time and time again. And one of the biggest ways we do that is when we try to play God, when we try to manipulate life at its very beginning. And when you eliminate God, when you take him out of that moral, you know, equation, when you take him from your moral considerations, anything goes, right? Anything goes at that point in time. Take God out, anything goes. So in China, it's a godless society, you know, there have been some really strange experiments being done that border on what Dr. Frankenstein did. And I'm not kidding you. I'm not exaggerating here. One of those is getting a male rat to be able to give birth. Now, why do we need to do that? Why do you need a male rat to be able to give the birth? And by the way, they've done that. Now, the experiment has been condemned for how it was carried out. But scientists have also put human cells into monkey embryos. And they're doing that. They're trying to grow human parts in monkeys for transplantation later. So scientists, in China, they're tinkering with these types of experiments. And BBC, they actually took a look at what China was doing, and some very serious ethical issues have been raised. Listen to this coming from the BBC.
Serious ethical issues are being raised after it emerged that US and Chinese scientists have implanted human cells into monkey embryos. The aim of the research is to understand more about how cells develop and to help research in cultivating organs for transplant. The scientists injected human stem cells, cells that have the ability to develop into many different body tissues, into macaque embryos. The developing embryos were studied for up to 20 days. Other so-called mixed species embryos or chimeras have been produced in the past, with human cells implanted into sheep and pig embryos. This scientific group was led by Professor Juan Belmonte of the Salk Institute in the US. He says the work could address the shortage in transplantable organs and help us understand more about early human development, the way disease progresses, and aging.
So that experiment has been condemned. There are also cases of gene editing twin girls. Remember that? Remember? That was a whole nother story. That was just a couple years ago. It was 2018. They did this gene editing on girls back in 2018 in utero to make them immune to AIDS. That, of course, was condemned as well. And I think that scientist actually ended up disappearing. I don't know where he is right now. But gene-edited babies have already been created. Here's a little summary from the video from the World Science Festival. Listen to this.
It was a birth announcement that shocked the world.
Two beautiful little Chinese girls named Lulu and Lala came crying into the world as healthy as any other babies a few weeks ago.
Chinese biophysicist He Zhangqi, working largely in secret, had used CRISPR to knock out a gene called CCR5 in two early human embryos, then returned the embryos to their mother's womb. CCR5 plays a key role in HIV infection, and the girl's father was HIV positive. He said his motive was noble.
As a father of two girls, I can't think of a gift more beautiful and wholesome for the society than giving another couple a chance to start a loving family.
But the scientific community did not cheer. At the International Summit on Human Genome Editing that He attended shortly after the announcement, the reaction was shock and condemnation.
I understand my work will be controversial, but I believe family need this technology, and I'm willing to take the criticism for them.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I don't want to just throw stones at China. It's not just China where these things are happening. I mean, here in our own country, there are some laws, as I speak, that are being written that will allow even worse things to happen. The state of Vermont is considering a proposal that reads like this. Let me just quote this for you. I saw this earlier. It says, quote, that an individual's right to personal reproductive autonomy is central to the liberty and dignity to determine one's own life course and shall not be denied or infringed upon unless, now listen to the qualifier, unless justified by a compelling state interest achieved by the least restrictive means. The key words there, unless justified by a compelling state interest. What? Those state interests can certainly change, and who defines what the state interest is? On the surface, it sounds, you know, like abortion on demand, which is certainly true because Vermont has already passed a law allowing that Roe v. Wade should be overturned. But, you know, this proposal goes a whole lot farther than that. I mean, personal reproductive autonomy means that you can do with your gametes whatever you want to do with them, no matter, you know, what harm might come to any children you might generate. So, look, we are living in a really unique moment in history, and I think we have to have virtue and clear thinking and rationality as we approach these issues. And I'm joined by somebody who has been warning for a very long time about the path that we're heading down and just trying to raise the warning flags so that we can not divert, but rather follow a path to clear science and to good morality. And that's Wesley J. Smith. He's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. And of course, he's the author of a number of books, 14 of them. His latest is called Culture of Death, The Age of Do-Harm Medicine. And it's always good to have him with us. Wesley, good afternoon.
Thank you, Drew. Good to talk to you again.
Well, a lot of stories here. I came across. I thought of you instantly over the weekend. And let me start with the rat. I mean, this is the weird one. It really struck me. Why would anyone want to make a male give birth? I mean, what's the point of that? I mean, explain that one to me.
Well, you know, there's the excuse, but then what's really going on here is the anything goes mentality.
Yeah.
Let me read to you from the Journal of Medical Ethics about this issue. And the Journal of Medical Ethics, so your listeners know, is on Oxford University campus, so it's not like it's somebody in a corner with tin foil on their head. This is as mainstream and as respected and establishment as it gets. And a bioethicist wrote this: from a justice perspective, there is a moral imperative to ensure equitable access to UTX, meaning uterine transplant. In this case, arguments, and that's for transgendered women, right? Mm-hmm. Biological males who identify as women.
Yeah.
So the idea here is that there is a human rights obligation when there's a transgender woman, that if that person wants a uterus so that that person can gestate and give birth, there is the obligation to do it. Quote, in this case, arguments against providing uterine transplant to genetically XY, meaning male, biological, women for reasons unrelated to safety and efficacy should be assessed carefully to address discrimination against genetically XY women as a social group. So they're already in bioethics preparing the way for a fundamental right. And by the way, that gets into the Vermont law, maximum autonomy, right?
Yeah.
reproductive autonomy, that gets into the Vermont law. And the reason the mouse experiment was important is that this was the first step toward the potential of having uterus transplants into male bodies, biologically male bodies. And that is why I think, certainly a big part of the reason this was done. And if it wasn't why it was done, it is leading toward that step, towards because what they did with the rats is they conjoined a male rat and a female rat surgically. They did to more than one rat, but I'm using the singular. They took a uterus and transplanted it in the male that had been castrated, implanted embryos in the uterus, and because the female's blood was also partially nurturing, were able to gestate some pups to birth. Now, that's wrong on a lot of reasons. One is, to me, it's animal abuse. You should not just do what you want, even with research animals, because there's really no compelling purpose for this. So I think that was animal abuse. But secondly, the idea that there's going to be a fundamental human right for transgender women to give birth turns everything on its head. But that's what the Vermont statute or the proposed constitutional amendment would permit. If you have maximum reproductive autonomy that cannot be interfered with except by a compelling state interest, least restrictive method, there's no way you're going to be able to prevent transgendered women, biological male, from getting uterine transplants and giving birth, even though that might end up not being the best thing for the baby, right?
Yep.
So, and if you tried, you'd be called a bigot and a transphobe, and you would be accused of being a hater, when actually the opposite is the truth. But that's the kind of world we're in. It's a hedonistic world. Hedonism, me, I, solipsism, and it is moving us towards social disintegration, where instead of being a forest, like an ecosystem as a society, we are just a bunch of trees standing next to each other doing what we want. We're becoming totally atomized, and the ability to stand and draw lines in the sand on these issues is really corroding.
How likely or how far off is the possibility that, you know, they'll be able to have a transgender person, a male, carry a baby to term?
You know, I don't know, but they've already been able to successfully do uterine transplants in women and have babies born. And that was done through a cesarean section, the births. Proof of concept has been given. Now, the issue, of course, is the kind of hormones you need and the symbiotic relationship between a female body and a gestating baby. But this is what biotech is trying to do. It's a Tower of Babel enterprise. It's trying to cast aside all limitations. And they say, well, and when you try to have, you know, I've repeatedly argued in National Review and other places, First Things, Epoch Times, the publications in which I am allowed to contribute, that we need to have some binding regulations. We need to stop this stuff and have a really important international conversation about what we should permit and what we shouldn't, because there's a lot of biotech that could work really well. You were talking about CRISPR. The problem with the CRISPR experiment by the Chinese scientist, who is known as JK for short, is that he did germline genetic engineering on babies, meaning the changes he made in those babies will carry down the generations. Mm-hmm. It was also certainly medically unnecessary, because you can keep children if you're HIV positive and you're a male and you want to have a baby with your wife, we'll say, there are ways you can do that. But it also harmed them potentially, because that same gene is involved in the flu, and it may make it actually these children more susceptible to the flu than otherwise. But the problem was that it's germline genetic engineering, meaning your genetic engineers and the changes will go down the generations. On the other hand, CRISPR has been used in somatic cell experiments. And I wrote about this on the corner in National Review, if people want to read it, where you're actually potentially able to treat genetic diseases in somebody with a condition that will then allow that person to have a successful change in their health. and that does not pass down the generations. And that's important because on all of these issues of genes and the various expression of genes, we don't know what all these genes do. There are very few genes that only have one function, like the gene involved with Huntington's disease has one function. But many genes have, for example, sickle cell anemia. The gene that leads to sickle cell anemia also helps African people fight against malaria. So there are very, you know, we're dealing with things that are way over our head. But when you try to say, let's have a real conversation to have legally binding international regulations saying what can be done and what can't be done, the scientific community says, no, we need to have voluntary regulations. But voluntary guidelines are worth the paper they're written on. They're not enforceable. And you've seen what happens, just the things that you described in your introduction, right, with voluntary guidelines, because we can't trust people anymore to basically restrict themselves. And the only real things that prevent some of these in the United States are lack of federal funding, for example. There are some preventatives in there, and the Equality Act, I think, or some of the others would actually kick out some of these laws that prevent, for example, embryos to be created for the purposes of experimentation. That's the Wicker-Dickey Amendment. And also, whether people are going to look upon you with scorn. But the JK disappeared. He was sent to jail. But don't tell me the Chinese overlords in that country didn't know what he was up to. They were just upset at the uproar. But the uproar wasn't because it was germline genetic engineering. The uproar was the timing. We haven't been sufficiently desensitized by bioethicists saying that everything is under control and don't worry, we're thinking about what the ethics are. I don't believe, because the National the name of the big scientific organization, but they actually have said, in theory, they support germline genetic engineering of human beings. Wow. So don't tell me that this is something that people were upset about in terms of concept. They were upset about it in terms of timing.
Hey, Wesley, on another note, I want to talk to you a little bit about what's happening in Vermont. I know you wrote a piece, you detailed it, and hopefully we can link over to that in National Review about the kind of things that can be done if the law in Vermont, if their Vermont proposal gets passed. Lay that out for everyone. You know, explain what's now happening and the things that you are now talking about, the things that concern you.
There is a proposed constitutional amendment to the Vermont Constitution. In order to get a constitutional initiative on the ballot in Vermont, it has to pass the legislature twice. It's already passed in 2019 overwhelmingly in the legislature. It's now before the legislature again, and if it passes this year, and I don't see any reason why it won't, it will be on the 2022 ballot. And here's what it says. I'll read it to you. An individual's right to personal reproductive autonomy is central to the liberty and dignity to determine one's life course and shall not be denied or infringed unless justified by a compelling state interest, as you mentioned, achieved by the least restrictive means. Now, a lot of opponents of Prop 5 said, well, that will open the door to abortion on demand through the ninth month in Vermont. Well, that's not the reason for this potential constitutional amendment, because Vermont already has a law that allows abortion through the ninth month without any interference. It's an absolute statutory right to abortion in Vermont. Vermont also has a law that says that unborn life, embryos, fetuses, have no independent rights in the state. And that has nothing to do with whether or not a woman is gestating that unborn life. That opens the door to experimenting on fetuses. It's called fetal farming in the vernacular. Perhaps, for example, a bioethicist named Jacob Apple, A-P-P-E-L, people can read it if they want to look it up, has advocated that when women want to have an abortion, pay them to gestate for longer so that the fetal remains can be of better use, can be used in organ transplants and things of that sort. So this opened, and we've already done live fetal research back in the late 60s that was only overturned because Ted Kennedy, of all people, found out about it made it so that the National Institutes of Health wouldn't fund it anymore. But what might that open up? An absolute right to reproductive autonomy. It would open up the door to human cloning, reproductive cloning, because that would be autonomy. Three-parent embryos, where if you had a thruple, that is a polyamorous grouping of three people, you would want to make it so that every person in that throuple had a biological connection to the child. And they now can do that. They've done it in animals, and it's actually been approved in the UK as a means of fighting mitochondrial disease, but it could also be used to create novel family forms. They have two womb babies that are being done now, and here's what happens in the two womb babies. And this would also be part of this absolute reproductive autonomy. A lesbian couple want to have a child. A child is created through IVF. That embryo is implanted in one of the women, left there for several hours, removed from that woman, and then transplanted in the woman who's going to gestate until birth, so that both have carried that child. Well, that's not for the benefit of the child. That's so that the women can feel better about things, but that shouldn't be what the criteria is. But if you try to say that's wrong, you're a hater, you're anti-gay or whatever it might be. How about genetic engineering of a child, which we've just discussed? That would be part of autonomy, wouldn't it? Reproductive autonomy. Fetal farming, which we've just discussed, would be. Pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, which is already done for health reasons. That is, you take a IVF embryo, and when it's a little bit along, you take out a cell. You take that cell, and then you analyze the cell to see if there are any diseases. And then if it passes muster, you know, this is quality control, then the embryo might be implanted. Well, they're doing it mainly for health reasons today, but or sex selection, they're doing that today. What about doing it for other eugenics reasons than sex selection? That certainly would be part of reproductive autonomy. Commercial surrogacy for any reason. Using CRISPR, which they're beginning to do use CRISPR on skin cells to create stem cells that would then lead to creation of eggs and sperm so that the same person could actually be both mother and father to a child. That is theoretically possible. It hasn't been done, obviously. But these are the kinds of things that you're talking about. It's reproductive anarchy. And it is such a profound hedonism that it destroys our ability to actually, in my opinion, have a society that's cohesive. Because everybody will be doing what they want because it's what they want. We'll be a bunch of trees standing next to each other instead of an ecosystem like a forest. And it's really disturbing.
Wesley, I only have about a minute left. So just final thoughts on this. Is there any group in the world that can stop this stuff from happening? I mean, it seems like this is a giant snowball just getting bigger, you know, racing downhill, just getting larger, and the momentum's picking up. Who's out there? What can be done? What do you see for the future?
Well, I hope the people of Vermont vote no if it gets on the ballot. That would be a help. But instead of being complacent and say, oh, that'll never happen here, engage these issues, learn about them, debate them. I'm sensing, Drew, a lot of exhaustion. People are just sick of this constantly happening. They're saying, fine, do what you want, leave me alone. The problem is they're not going to leave you alone. Yeah. They want you not only to allow it, but they want you to affirm that this is right. And so we just have to stand strong.
Yeah. Wesley, thanks for being here. We'll talk again soon. I'm always grateful for your voice and your vigilance. Check out Wesley's book, Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. It's one of his latest. He's the author of 14 books. Follow him on Twitter as well. At the Wesley J. Smith. That's at the Wesley J. Smith. You'll be in the know on all these issues that he's covering. And of course, his article, he blogs at National Reviews Online, The Corner. You can follow him there. My thanks to Wesley Smith. Stay with me. I need to take a short pause, but I'll be back with more right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
All the news and issues
now
that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's right. Getting you plugged into the most important news of the day. Hopefully giving you a rational look at it, debating it, looking at the moral implications of it, and you just tuned in. It's good to have you with me today. I want to talk about what we're now seeing happening around the country. Remember last summer? Let's go back for a minute. Remember the riots And what we saw in the streets, you know, we saw all of these statues being torn down. They had this whole statue conflict. It began after, you know, Michael Brown was killed in Missouri in 2014. And then statues of Confederate leaders were the first ones to come down in 2014. Then again last year. But then it expanded. It went beyond, you know, Confederates. It went to saints. It went to statues of St. Junipero Serra. It went to the founders of the country, like Christopher Columbus, even to statues of men who were abolitionists. So it was no longer these people who championed slavery, who fought for the South. No, it was a great evangelist like Junipero Serra, or a man who risked everything like Columbus, or these abolitionists. It looks like we're having a revival of these statue wars again. There was a story that broke, and I thought we should probably talk about it. The city of Charlottesville, Virginia, is, you might have seen this over the weekend. They removed their statue of General Robert E. Lee and, of course, Thomas Stonewall Jackson. And it has made a lot of headlines. In fact, ABC News took a look at what happened in Charlottesville over the weekend. Let me share their perspective, and then let's talk about this.
A towering crane today plucking Confederate General Robert E. Lee's statue from its pedestal in downtown Charlottesville. The monument many Americans believe glorifies slavery and white supremacy hauled off to cheers and applause.
Today, the statue comes down, and we're one small step closer to a more perfect union.
Just 90 minutes later, a statue of Confederate General Thomas Stonewall Jackson meeting the same fate. Activists fighting for years to remove those Civil War monuments, their efforts in part sparking the Unite the Right rally in 2017. The removal of those statues today, the latest in a cross-country movement. Cities and states now reckoning with America's dark past, eliminating symbols of racism from public areas.
To have people not see the reality and the brutality of these statues is overwhelming. So this is a good day.
All right, of course, that was ABC News reporting on that story there. You might consider, you know, hey, I don't have a problem with that, Drew. It's pretty reasonable, right? Considering that, you know, Stonewall Jackson and Lee, you know, they fought the North in order to keep slavery in the South. Let's take them down, right? But all of a sudden, the city council voted to approve removing statues, not just to these guys, right? But how about Lewis and Clark and the Native American that was with them? What was her name again, Patrick? Sacagawea, right? Took their statues down. I mean, think of that accomplishment, what they were able to do and how wild that frontier was. Why are you erasing them from history? Those two explorers, of course, relied heavily on Sacagawea's knowledge and other Native tribes to guide them through the, you know, we had an uncharted country at the time, uncharted terrain. Anything west of the Mississippi was new territory. But the council said that it was the completion of a decision that they made back in 2019 after they consulted with the Native American groups. That's why they took her down. I think she's an American hero. I think it's ridiculous. Further north in our nation's capital, there's an official agency of the city's government called the Council Office of Racial Equality, whose website's motto is this. And I want to quote them. Quote, "Everything is a matter of racial equity." That's their motto. Everything is a matter of racial equity. And they voted down a plan to have a statue of Abraham Lincoln made and placed in the American Civil War Museum. And what ended up happening was the city council itself unanimously approved the statue, and the mayor said she's in favor of it, but the council Office of Racial Equity claims, Lincoln? I don't know. That legacy's debated. And that a statue would do nothing but promote racial equity in the city. So I'm thinking, what is going on? And what does that even mean, right? Dr. Eric Wallace, he is a former pastor, a police officer, and a political candidate. He's the founder of Freedom's Journal Institute for Study of Faith and Public Policy. He joins us today for some perspective. And, Doctor, it's good to talk with you again. I always appreciate our exchanges.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be with you, Drew.
So, you know, I go through some of this, and there's others. I thought, you know, most of the offensive statues around the country had already been purged. And I'm not a fan of erasing history. I don't have a problem if you want to take lead. I said before, maybe we should set up a museum so we can remember our history, not eradicate it altogether. But I'd like your take on it. Should we actually get rid of them? I mean, even guys like Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, they're taking them down, big figures during the Civil chapter in American history of the Civil War. But give me your take on that. I mean, what we're seeing and you know, where do we draw the line? Who goes, who doesn't go?
That's an interesting question. And, you know, there's a bunch of quotes about, you know, learning from our history. Those who cannot learn from our history are damned to repeat it. George Santayana. Now, those aren't my words. I don't use them. But that's what he said. And, you know, Cicero said to remain ignorant of our history is to remain forever children.
Yeah.
That was Cicero. So, you know, as you know, you asked a good question. Which statues come down? I lived in Richmond for a while, and there were a number of, you know, Confederate statues. I never even gave it much thought, except that they were there and remind us of what happened in our past. And I always think that's a good thing, even the bad things that happened in our past. So we don't ever get so full of ourselves that we think we're better than other folks. That America has its blemishes, but also America has its triumphs. And I think that's what makes America so special, is that, yeah, we've got a bunch of human beings with a bunch of flaws, but even those flaws we try to fix. We just don't leave them as they are. And the whole idea about trying to not allow Lincoln or take down Lincoln's statue is ridiculous, because we're not only not understanding our history, we're trying to rewrite that history and make it different than what it actually is. And we're trying to hold people to a standard that we can't even live up to ourselves in our century. So
yeah,
I think it's a foolish proposition.
Yeah, I'm with you, especially when it comes to Lincoln. I have a real problem with his statues going. He was the great emancipator, right? I mean, history scholars recently ranked Lincoln as you know, the best president in American history. And of course, yes, his legacy is debated in the African American community. Unpack that for us too, Doctor. I mean, what's the debate? Did he not do enough? There's a lot of blood was shed for the vanquishing
exactly.
of slavery in this country.
Exactly.
But give me your take. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well, look, part of the problem is people don't understand what Lincoln was actually going through. Again, we're looking at with 21st century eyes, yeah. you know, back at the 19th century, and not understanding all the what society was going through, all the issues that Lincoln had to deal with. So if he makes a statement saying, you know, if I could, the number one thing was to keep the Union together.
Right.
And if he could keep the Union together without freeing the slaves, he would. All he's trying to do is say the number one thing is to keep the Union together. It wasn't saying that, you know, I want to keep slavery. I think his idea was that we destroy slavery in another way. The hope was that we could keep the Union together and still deal with the issue of slavery. He wasn't saying he wanted to keep slavery. I mean, he went through a whole lot to get rid of it. You know, we fought a war. He pushed through the 13th Amendment to get rid of slavery. The other issue is the Emancipation Proclamation. People will say, well, it only freed the slaves, you know, that it rebelled. Well, that's the only leverage he had. Okay, he couldn't free slaves in, you know, we don't understand what federalism is, right?
Right.
So, you know, he only had the authority in the rebellious states that the Union had taken over. Which is why the whole Juneteenth thing was so important. That it's not that the slaves didn't hear about the freedom of the Emancipation Proclamation, but they couldn't do anything about it until the Union soldiers had come and taken over Texas and said, you guys are now free. So it didn't matter whether they heard it or not. They couldn't act upon it, right? So there are a number of issues like that. And there's one more that I can't remember. He made some kind of statement on slavery, but you have to understand that where Washington, D.C. sits, right,
yeah.
where the Capitol sits, it's yeah. set between two slave-holding states. So he had to be careful about what he said
mm-hmm.
and who he said it to, because troops from the North couldn't make it to the South, or at least couldn't make it to the Capitol, if he pissed off the people in Maryland.
Right.
And Maryland did not succeed. Maryland stayed a part of the Union. So there's a lot of issues that people don't really understand.
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point. And I like what you said. You know, we're using 21st century values in retrospect, really, to judge what people in earlier times had to deal with and how they viewed things. But let's talk about that for a second. Are the values that are being used today the correct values to use? How do you see the values that we're looking at things through?
Well, if you're talking about this particular issue specifically,
yeah.
I really don't think that we're using any particular values at all. I mean, really, the issue here is not the issue. The issue is about, it's not about really about statues, and it's not really about race. It's about the revolution. They're trying to tear down our history, try to say that everything's racist. They're trying to cause chaos. And, you know, whether it's some kind of gender dysphoria, whether it's, you know, critical theory is attacking everything. And I think the objective is not necessary. I mean, while they're talking about tearing down statues, they've really got something else going on. It's about a revolution. They want to change, definitively change the United States of America from a capitalist country to a socialist country. And they're trying to cause chaos every place and everywhere possible. And they'll use this pretense that, oh, you know, I'm offended by this and I'm offended by that. No, they're offended because we're a Judeo-Christian country that understands capitalism, and we want equality. We want freedom, freedom to worship, freedom, you know, freedom to make decisions and not have the state be our God, if you will.
You know, the what we're seeing here with Lewis and Clark, these great explorers, and of course, the Native American guide who was so instrumental in their success, their statues are being brought down. You know, I think of Washington and Jefferson. Are they next? I mean, they were both slaveholders.
Yeah.
Yet, you know, we don't necessarily celebrate Washington as a general. You know, we don't celebrate that flaw. I mean, we look at Washington's achievement, who led the nation to independence. No, go ahead, Doctor. Go ahead.
Well, let me challenge that, the whole idea about they were slaveholders. Well, first of all, the founding fathers didn't start slavery. It was here 100 years before they got here.
And we weren't the only nation that had it, right?
Yeah, and they were born into it. So the question is, how do you stop something that has been around for decades before you ever got here? So it's not like we can just flip a switch and say, okay, slavery is over.
Yeah, right.
You had to figure out, okay, and there were laws, you know, the Declaration of Independence. I asked a friend of mine, because he was trying to say, yeah, these guys that these founding fathers all had slaves. I said, well, have you read the Declaration of Independence, the original version? In the original version, there was a long section where Thomas Jefferson was explaining to the king how they tried to emancipate slaves, but the king wouldn't let them. There were laws within the colonies that wouldn't let people emancipate their slaves. So if you can't emancipate your slaves when they are given to you and passed down because they are considered property, right? So they'd be passed down in people's wills. And you couldn't, and if it was part of a woman's dowry, you couldn't emancipate them either.
Right.
So there were certain laws that existed during the time which made it almost impossible for you to do anything. And Virginia, from what I understand, even once they fought the British and beat the British, they still had laws on the books that made it almost impossible for them to emancipate their slaves for quite some time, because it was a, you know, southern state and they wanted to keep slavery around.
Yep.
So we're hard on these people saying, well, they own slaves. Well, you know, a lot of people own slaves, and a lot of people couldn't. There was some stuff that couldn't be done because of the laws at the time.
You're right.
I'm sorry. That kind of gets to me.
No. I'm glad. Hey, it's a great point, because, you know, I think about Thomas Jefferson, who articulated perhaps one of the most eloquent cases for liberty ever written, and words that ultimately inspired abolitionists and civil rights leaders and freedom fighters throughout the world ever since. I mean, not just our country, but around the world. And I'm with you on that. You know, Washington and Jefferson, they lived in a place and a time very different than our own. They had different challenges. And I think you're right. We need to go back to that time and see the environment that they were in and the challenges they faced and understood. understand why they did what they did. And they stood up to power in defense of liberty. And, you know, what we have today is a great nation. And I'm with you. Look, I've got to take a short pause. Stay with me, Doctor. When we come back, we'll talk more. If you want to get in on the conversation, I'll open the phones. It's the final segment of my time with you today, but I'd love to hear from you. The number is 888-914-9149. We're taking a look right now at more statues coming down. Many people applaud and agree with, like Lee and Stonewall Jackson. Others, like Lewis and Clark, they're scratching their head. Will they come for Thomas Jefferson and George Washington next? I don't think we should ignore the flaws of our founding fathers. It's all part of the complicated way that history works, and in particular, the contradictory nature of America's founding. But if the standard becomes that we can't honor those who did good because they also had flaws, then there's really no way to establish any sort of shared history, is there? We'll talk more. My guest, Dr. Eric Wallace, and grab a pen and paper. I'll tell you how you can follow him and his great work. More straight ahead.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit RelevantRadio.com/Forester.
Get informed and get connected. It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Republican politicians have been framing this theory as a threat to American children, and legislators in more than 12 states have proposed bills to ban it. Weingarten says her union is prepared to stand up for any member who is punished for teaching lessons on race and racism. CNN's Ellie Reeves spoke with a teacher who uses critical race theory and looked at how backlash to this framework has exploded. So, Ellie, do these vocal opponents of critical race theory actually understand fully what it is?
No. And why should they? It's an academic theory mostly taught at the grad student level. But what they think it means is teaching white kids that all white people are bad and racist. And so, of course, they're afraid of that.
All right, there you have it. Just a little perspective on that for you. CNN journalists think it's their job to, that was from CNN, to bully parents and conservatives concerned about liberal propaganda that's being taught to their kids, to the next generation. And that was obvious on the program New Day, where one CNN reporter belittled parents protesting critical race theory. And they don't want their kids being taught it. They think that these parents are brainwashed by Fox News. So co-host Brianna, I think her last name is Keeler, started the segment by noting the controversy between teachers' unions embracing critical race theory and parents pushing back against it before diving straight into, you know, the mockery and the condensation. Let's talk about that. We're talking about statues coming down. We're taking a look at critical race theory, CNN bullying parents concerned about it. Look, I wish and I pray that, you know, we can look at one another and not see a skin color, that we can be judged on the content of someone's character, right? Not on the color of their skin. That's where we should be today. And this race issue has just been pumped up to such a degree that it's tearing the nation apart and it's tearing statues down. And I'm joined today by Dr. Eric Wallace. It's good to have him back with us today. And Doctor, before I jump into the phones, I want your take on CRT as well. Look, there has been a real pushback by parents against the use of critical race theory in schools. Arizona just passed a law forbidding its use in state-run schools, but the left is really pushing back against that. Are conservatives missing something? Are they not seeing the full picture? Are they missing something about CRT? How do you read what's going down?
Actually, I mean, I agree that critical race theory is bad, but I think part of our problem is actually looking at critical theory as a whole, because that's where it comes out of. There's a number of different tentacles that come out of critical theory, and one of them is critical race theory. The other one is critical queer theory and a bunch of other critical theories, but they all have their roots coming out of socialism, out of Marxism. And so if all we're going to do is focus on the critical race piece, it puts us in a position to be criticized as being racist, and you just don't want this being taught. Well, there are a number of different reasons we don't want it being taught, but in general, this stuff comes out of Marxism, and we don't agree with it. It's all about the oppressor and the oppressed. And, of course, in critical race theories, it's white people who are the oppressors. And this Western, they're actually fighting against Judeo-Christian values that have come out of the West and come to the United States. And I was talking to a friend of mine today. I said, this is hypocrisy, because Judeo-Christian values actually come out of the Middle East. They come out of Israel, right? And so, and then it goes from Israel to Italy, to Rome, and then from Rome into Eastern, Western Europe. So, but critical race theory, socialism, actually comes out of Europe. And so if you really want to get rid of something that is European, let's get rid of Marxism. Let's get rid of socialism.
Yeah, I think it's such a great point. That's true. That's the origins or the roots of a lot of this are underpinned by that ideology. Let's take a few calls. I only have a few minutes left in the segment today. And if you do want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. I'll do my best to get you on. I'm speaking today with Dr. Eric Wallace. Art is listening in California and has got a comment for you, doctor, or a question. Hi, Art.
Oh, hi. Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, about the critical race theory. I don't know if most people are well-read, but it's like the Ananerba. It's also racial in nature, but this time they're promoting the German race as the superior race. And in the critical race theory, it may be promoting the inferior race as the superior one. And every white man is a racist. Doesn't that ring a bell to you, that every Jew is a scrounger or something? I mean, in the Green New Deal, if you read the Lebensraum, every living space is what's needed. Same with this Green New Deal. Every living space should be green so that we can live in it.
Art, thanks. I'm going to let the doctor respond because we have a few moments. So he's saying CRT is similar to documents from Nazi Germany and from the ideology that was used back then targeting Jews.
Well, anything that focuses on race is just, you know, is like that. It's, you know, eugenics. I mean, Hitler got his stuff from eugenics, saying that there's one race of people that is superior to another race of people. And that's basically the way it's coming out, that, you know, those of you who are white are infected. If we're talking about in Christian terms, you're infected with the unpardonable sin. You can't be pardoned from it.
Yeah.
And you're stained for life. I mean, that's it.
Suzanne in New Jersey, thank you for joining us. You are on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I didn't hear my name. So
yeah, hi, Suzanne. You're on with Dr. Wallace. Go right ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to share that you're absolutely correct that this isn't about taking down statues in opposition to racism, because they were defacing the statue of other, as you said, abolitionists like Thaddeus Kosciuszko, sometimes referred to as Kosciuszko. His statue was in Washington, is in Washington, D.C., and they don't even know who he is. And he came from Poland, experiencing the partitions of Poland under oppression from Russia, Prussia, and Austria, and came to help defend the Constitution and the freedoms here. And he was given slaves as part of his payment for his service in the United States during the Revolutionary War. And he put in his will that his assets were to go to not only the freedom of slaves, but to their education.
Well, Suzanne, thank you for sharing that. Doctor, I'm going to let you respond. I have about a moment left. I'm going to give you final thoughts. We're echoing something we said a little bit earlier in the broadcast as well, but go right ahead.
Yeah, well, she's correct. This isn't about that. I mean, from what I understand, I can't give a source. My understanding was that the communists, when they took over other states, or when the Nazis took over Germany, they got rid of a lot of history, and they did that on purpose. So we wouldn't know what our history was. So you couldn't tell that the South fought with the North and what it was all about. They want to blur it all. So then they can come back with, you know, and restate history the way they want to restate history.
Yeah, well, Doctor, I'm grateful for your time. I only have about a minute left. Your website, if people want to find you, it's freedomjournalinstitute.org. Is that the best way to get connected?
Yeah, Freedoms with an S, freedomsjournalinstitute.org.
That sounds great. And, you know, my producer was telling me you're running for office. You're running for what, 2024? What are you running for?
Well, I'm thinking about, I haven't made an announcement yet. I was thinking about running for 2022 U.S. Senate in Illinois.
That's good.
But I haven't made a decision yet.
All right. Well, look, we'll pray about it. We need well-formed, clear-thinking politicians. So I hope you discern. We'll pray for you, okay? I'd love to see that. All right. Hey, doctor, thank you. So good having you here.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Eric Wallace, a former pastor, police officer, now potential political candidate. And I've often said this. Look, if you don't like what's happening in the culture, you don't like what's happening, coming out of your legislature, then run for office, right? Speak truth to power. Transform the country. Use your gifts and your abilities to do that. And I think Donald Trump, I'm not championing him, but I'm just saying this is a guy with no political experience at all. He ascended to the highest office. So don't think that you can't get elected if you decide to run somewhere. We'll follow Dr. Wallace's decision, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to him more in the not-too-distant future. Thanks for letting me be part of your day, your afternoon. Cale Clark is coming up. Stay tuned for him. It's always a fun and enlightening conversation. I'll be back again in 21 hours. We'll have a fascinating program for you then. Until then, have a great day.